Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to episode 9 of the 2QB Experience. This is the Jay Cutler Experience. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Greg Smith. On the line with me, your other host, Joshua Lake. Josh, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be back and diving in full speed. We're going weekly now.
I know it's kind of terrifying, but I'm looking forward to it. It will definitely keep me thinking about fantasy football more and more, which can only be a good thing, really.
Of course, it's that part of the summer where you kind of feel like you're turning the corner and football's in sight.
Yep. And to kick things off on this episode, we do want to start off with probably what everyone's tuning in for, and that's to find out who won entry into the Scott Fish Bowl. And we had a contest for, you know, ratings and reviews of the podcast. We randomized all those names up into a hat, and I promise the shared last name had no influence on it, but Brian Smith is our winner. Congratulations, Brian. Send us a tweet, shoot us an email, either at 2QBs on Twitter or at 2QBs@gmail.com. We'll get you hooked up with that entry. Congratulations, and thanks to everybody who rated and reviewed the podcast. There could only be one winner for this, unfortunately, but we do appreciate the feedback and the promotion on the podcast front. So very much appreciated. Thank you all very much.
Yeah, really appreciate it. There were a whole lot of kind words there.
Yep, very cool. And with that, I just want to dive right in. There's a lot of new stuff at the site to get to. We're going to start with one that came up a little while ago from a guest writer at the site, Nathan Powell. And he had an article about overvaluing elite quarterbacks in 2QB Dynasty. Now, we don't need to go too in-depth on his article. You guys should all check it out if you're listening. But what's your philosophy on the elite QBs, Josh, just in a nutshell?
I generally am going to tend to get one and then wait a long time. That's kind of my preferred strategy in a startup. But I'm also content to wait till the middle rounds. I really don't want to get one outside of the top four, like in that 5 to 8 range. If I'm not going to get a top four guy, I'll wait a long time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And that ties in pretty well to a listener question we got from Eric P. at A Game of Throws on Twitter. He says, can you talk about startup strategies? And we do get these sort of dynasty questions a lot, the reason I'm bringing this question up at the top of the episode is that I recently did a 2QB startup mock courtesy of Kevin O'Brien at the FF Engineer on Twitter. There's some underscores in there, too, so search for the name at your peril. But you should definitely give Kevin a follow. He'll be running some dynasty mocks for 2QB, it seems like, going forward. Definitely a good resource if you're interested in that sort of thing. But as I was doing one of these mocks, I had this idea, and it kind of ties into this general notion that 2017 rookie picks are going to be very, very good. They're going to be high in value. And my idea was this. If we know that 2017 and its rookie class is so, you know, powerful from a fantasy football value standpoint, should that make us increase the value of, you know, win now type of players, knowing that we're going to have to turn over our roster a little more than normal once the 2017 rookie drafts hit? So, I mean, if that class is so great, does it make it more reasonable to draft and use, you know, short-term values like aging veterans, you know, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, those type of players? What do you think about this idea, Josh? Does it make sense to you?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, just because everyone is saying that 2017 class is going to be incredible. And I guess the real question is, just how incredible are they going? How many veterans are they going to push down in the rankings, right? Because sure, the top ones will get into the top tiers of dynasty rankings, but will 5 players, will 10 players, just how deep is that talent going to be? And that's something where I look to brighter minds than myself, folks that spend more time looking at college football, to know. But I think it's certainly possible that just hearing how good the class is may mean we're undervaluing veterans, just assuming that any of those top 12 picks will be worth more than the veterans. That may not be correct.
Well, and not only are those, you know, elite 2017 rookies going to push the veterans down the rankings, they're going to push the rookies that we've drafted over the past 2 years down the rankings as well. You know, we've heard reports that there are multiple running backs in this upcoming class that are better than Ezekiel Elliott. And right now, Ezekiel Elliott is basically at the peak of his powers in terms of fantasy value. So, yeah, it's an interesting thought. You know, that's the constant struggle when you're trying to evaluate a dynasty draft, especially in startup, is how much do you prioritize winning now with, players who aren't going to last quite as long in the league versus setting yourself up for the future with younger players. And I don't know. I definitely, as I've kind of grown into, you know, dynasty research over the past year or so, I find myself leaning more and more towards the win now, basically as a default strategy, because I always feel like you can try to pick up the pieces down the road. Maybe I'm overestimating my own abilities as a roster manager, and I'm also possibly being a little arrogant, especially because I haven't played that much Dynasty. But I do think it's interesting to think about, you know, maybe taking a factor that's down the road to help apply strategy to right now. And yeah, if 2017 is anything like what we're talking about or what we're hearing about, then yeah, I think that, you know, the aging guys do go up in value. That makes sense to me.
Well, and again, I'll say one of my big mantras, I guess, is play to your strengths. So if you historically do well drafting rookies and you year over year can keep finding good ones and evaluating well, then know that. But if you really struggle and your rookie picks tend to bomb fairly often, just for whatever reason, lack of preparation, wrong guessing, wrong evaluation, then maybe you do shy away from it a little more and towards the veterans. But I think if you're in a startup right now and you're trying to decide between veterans and that 2017 class, I'm a big fan of trying to make sure you have a winning team now. Certainly getting some youth on the team and getting a look to the future, but I want to start by having a team that can compete right away. I don't personally like the idea of just mortgaging the whole first year.
Yeah, and I think that in two QB leagues, that might even hold more water than it would in a one quarterback format, if only because you have to go deeper at, you know, a position where you wouldn't normally have to, which means that more of those kind of veterans and short-term values are going to be in play at the quarterback position. So with that in mind, you can kind of play to that, I think. Anything else you got on startup strategies for 2QB Dynasty, Josh, before we move on?
Not a whole lot. I will say I recently was on the DLF podcast with Jeff Miller and Dan Mailer. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. That's bad. But talking similarly about kind of dynasty strategies for 2QB leagues, and they had a lot of great thoughts. They were kind to let me listen in and learn from them. So I'll recommend that episode.
Very cool. Yeah, check out that episode if you can. Speaking of, you know, recommendations, let's talk about a lot of new stuff at 2QBs.com. We're not going to go in depth here. I'm just going to kind of list a lot of stuff that's changed since our last episode. We've had a little bit of a hiatus here before we go weekly. And yeah, just a lot is going on at the site. The first thing I want to touch on is 2QB ADP available. This is, you know, redraft for the most part. Josh has done a great job setting up and running a ton of mock drafts to gather the ADP data for 2QB leagues. 10-team ADP, but it's pretty easy to apply that stuff to 12-team leagues. Maybe not necessarily in terms of which rounds the quarterbacks are going in, but how the quarterbacks are valued relative to one another. That all is going to stay about the same. In addition to the ADP on the site, we also have updated our rankings page. We have a new and improved ranking setup thanks to Scott Fish. Scott, very much appreciated. Thank you very much for all your help on that. On that rankings tip, we have another update to the Twitter poll rankings that we've mentioned on the podcast before. Josh, you just wrote up a little bit on that. Any quick thoughts on how that went?
Yeah, this has been, so we did the same thing. We did these QB polls in March, and at that point we started from the top and went down. This time here in June, we've started at the bottom and are going up. And so it's been interesting to see this month's results tell us which players the community likes a whole lot better than we do. And so seeing Blake Bortles win several rounds, Ryan Fitzpatrick win several rounds, tells me that those may be two names I need to go back and think a little more about just to evaluate if I disagree that much with the consensus, am I wrong or are they wrong?
Yep, totally. And speaking of Ryan Fitzpatrick specifically, we have a bunch of quarterback camp battle pieces looking at teams where the quarterback position is in flux a little bit. And the one on the New York Jets was done by Joe Siniscalchi. He did a great job on that one. We also have one on the Denver Broncos from Jeff Dumont looking at Paxton Lynch and Mark Sanchez, and then one from the Cleveland Browns from Ben Cummins looking at RG3, Josh McCown, and Cody Kessler. In addition to those camp battles, we have some QB profiles that have gone up recently. Anthony Amico has done a couple, one for Matthew Stafford, one for Ryan Tannehill. Ben Cummins has one on Kirk Cousins. Our depth chart page has been updated with links to all the QB cards for those relevant quarterbacks. And if you haven't seen the QB cards, you should definitely check that out. We have a lot of stats on these podcasts that we're going to reference that are straight from there. So if there's a player you don't hear us talk about here, but you want to, you know, get that QB card info, you can find that on the site. The last piece I want to note is one from co-founder Sal Stefanilli, the evolution of 2QB ADP. And this kind of ties in well to our main topic for the podcast. He looks at how ADP has changed for the quarterback position over the past few years. And generally the trend that we're seeing is that quarterbacks are going later and later and later, right? To tie into this late round quarterback trend that is kind of sweeping across fantasy football. And what we want to springboard off here into is a discussion about the quarterback middle class and how to make sense of those players, how to rank them, how to pick them and target them in drafts. Josh, what do you think about these guys in that QB 10 to QB 20 range? What's your philosophy on how to rank them?
Throw them all in a hat at this point, I think.
Right.
It's just chaos. It is a massive tier and you can have so much disagreement within it. Smart minds can differ all the way from 10 to 20.
Yeah. And I mean, by that token, I'm kind of interested in talking to you about some guys that we disagree on. And generally our rankings line up pretty well. But a couple of them that I wanted to note, the first is Tony Romo. You have him four spots lower than I do. I have him as a top 10 guy. You have him as QB 13. Why don't you think Tony Romo belongs in the top 12 or the top 10?
To me, it really is a scary thing that his collarbone is as fragile as it is. And I think it's the injury risk that worries me a lot. I have some concern that they don't have many weapons around him in the passing game other than Dez Witten getting a lot older, and they really still haven't done a whole lot with the wide receiver group. But the primary concern for me is that he may miss games. If he takes a hit and lands on his shoulder again, he could be gone.
Yeah, and I have that concern as well. I just think that most of the other QBs I have behind him are similarly risky in other ways. And I think that's indicative of what we're talking about here with the, you know, the difference in opinion on QBs after, say, the top eight or top nine. One of the biggest discrepancies you and I have, and just in general on the site, if you look at our, you know, staff rankings page, three of you guys have this guy in the top 13, and Anthony and I have him below QB 20, and that's Kirk Cousins. I have him at QB 22. You have him at QB 12. Now, I'll be the first to admit that I might push him up the next time I update my rankings. I've come around a little bit on Cousins, but not quite enough to get him into that, you know, top 15 at the position. Why do you like Cousins so much?
I think there's several reasons to like him. One is that too much has been made of his splits against good and bad pass defenses. That really isn't the most convincing split he had last year. An even more stark split was him in the first half of the season versus the second half of the season, showing that he really improved after he had several games under his belt and was clearly the team leader. And I do think that this is a team that has a lot of weapons in the passing game and has a pretty poor running game. Cousins was, I believe, fifth highest in terms of quarterbacks with pass attempts inside the red zone. He get a lot of opportunity, and he has a lot of weapons to throw to there, and obviously passing touchdowns correlate very well to fantasy scoring. And so I expect this is a team that keeps throwing and throwing inside the red zone, and I saw a lot of progress out of a player who had never before led a team, and so I expect even more growth now that he has the full off season to know the role he has.
Yeah, and I like that you bring up their kind of lack of a running game, because that is the main impetus of me wanting to move him up my rankings. With that said, I don't know exactly who I would move him past, and so I'm going to sort by my rankings here. And I mean, some of the guys I have behind are like Ryan Tannehill. He could definitely leapfrog Tannehill. That seems fine. He could leapfrog Joe Flacco. And then you start to get into some guys that I have a little bit more belief in, you know, Derek Carr, Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan, Blake Bortles. And I mean, I have Bortles lower than most everybody. I think Joe's the only guy who has him lower than I do. Generally, as a site, we're very down on Bortles. But I see the warts that Cousins has, and they're not that different than the warts of these other guys. I guess Cousins, I'm worried that we're looking at Cousins with a little bit too much of a recency tinted lens. Does that make sense?
Right, because it is really an 8-game sample where he was very good.
Yeah, and I think we look at the way we rank Bortles relative to his production last year. We're kind of pricing in regression when we put him in that QB 15 to QB 16 range, but we're not necessarily doing that with Kirk Cousins, even though it was kind of a similar situation that got him to the level of production that he was at in 2015. What do you think about the contrast between Bortles and Cousins?
I think it's the biggest thing that stands out to me is I am surprised at how much people are willing to trust Bortles and not trust Cousins, because I do think there are a lot of similarities that you can throw in Derek Carr, who you have just ahead of Cousins, even Jameis Winston, that all have kind of 1 year where they've shown that they can be fantasy viable. And it's hard to distinguish between them on the sake of just sample size. So you have to go to something deeper. And for me, it concerns me that Bortles has not been accurate. He's been a sub 60% passer both years, and that didn't improve. And that his touchdown rate last year was just off the charts high. And I have to expect that regresses some, and that they aren't always playing from so far behind and throwing as much as they were.
You brought up Jameis, and he's a guy that I'm kind of abnormally high on relative to some of these other QBs. And I think the difference for me with Jameis is that he did it in his rookie year, whereas we saw Bortles be terrible in his rookie year, and then we saw what could have been a fluky season last year. And that is why I'm a little more willing to put stock into Jameis and him continuing to improve. I don't know if that's fair to Bortles and Cousins and Carr, because they're all much lower in my rankings. But I feel like the pedigree is a little stronger with Winston. Do you think I'm off base there?
No, I think he has a whole lot of potential. And like you said, the fact that he did it in his rookie season is huge. He had an incredibly consistent rookie year. One concern I have is that he was buoyed by so many rushing touchdowns. I don't have the number in front of me, but had it not been for all those rushing touchdowns, he would have looked a lot worse. He needed those to get the floor he had. And so I don't know what he looks like. I don't know if he has the upside that several of these other players do, just because we haven't really seen that yet. And so with Bortles and Cousins, just as a contrast, we've seen them have elite upside, like weekly upside. Winston has shown that he can be pretty reliable in his rookie year, but I don't know if he has kind of the 450-yard, 4-touchdown game in him.
That's fair. I guess part of why I like Winston is we can see the fantasy community at large kind of going in on Mike Evans as, you know, a round two fantasy wide receiver. And for that to happen, I think that means that Jameis is just going to have to produce more. And I believe that both are going to happen, that Evans is maybe not going to live up to his ADP as it sits now, but he'll definitely be, you know, like a top 10, top 15 wide receiver. And that lack of maybe rushing upside that Jameis has up in the upcoming season, I feel like he'll make up for that with, you know, a kind of positive regression in the passing, passing in the red zone, if that makes sense. I'll acknowledge that, you know, rushing touchdowns tend to be worth more than passing touchdowns when you're talking about QBs, but I think there's a lot of room for growth there from Jameis and from Mike Evans, to the point where I'm not too concerned about any regression that he has on the rushing side.
Okay. And I don't dislike him. I've got him at 16 right now. And so I think he's a very reliable QB2. I hesitate to put him in the QB1 conversation because, like I said, I want more upside there. And you may be right. Maybe, obviously, if Mike Evans is going to become elite, that's going to help, or become an elite fantasy option, I should say. That's going to really help. I just am a little cautious. I don't know if I'm willing to trust him over several other names.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely out on a limb there. I'm kind of planting my flag on Jameis. I acknowledge that there's risk in me ranking him that high, but I do feel like that is the sort of thing you have to do in fantasy one way or another, whether you do it on a quarterback or a wide receiver or running back. At some point, you have to acknowledge that we don't have perfect information and that we do need to say, okay, well, here are the reasons I believe this QB is going to be better. And in the case of Jameis, for me, it has a lot to do with youth. It has a lot to do with the weapons around him. And just, I think that he's a beast. I think he's going to stay on the field. I think that, you know, their defense isn't going to be great, so he's going to have to throw a lot. I could see Jameis putting up the type of season that we got from Bortles last year with more efficiency and a little bit more accuracy. And that is really appealing to me as a, you know, a ranker of these guys. Now, with that said, this kind of roundabout brings us back to this notion of when do you draft these guys? Not just how do you rank them, but it's like, okay, if I think that Jameis is the 10th best quarterback, what round pick is that worth in a 2QB league? Because I could wait a number of rounds and take, say, Matthew Stafford later on, or, you know, Joe Flacco, Ryan Tannehill, Kirk Cousins, maybe the guys we're talking about now. Cousins is probably higher than Jameis in most people's rankings, so maybe that's a bad example. But when it comes to actually drafting these guys, how do you differentiate between them? I mean, we have your rankings, but I talked a little bit about why I like Winston. What's the impetus behind how you rank your quarterbacks in that range? And how do you know which guys you're willing to reach for? What you know, factors or you know, statistics are you looking at in that regard?
I think that's a great question, because it's really easy to say and really common to say, just wait, get the bottom of the tier and you'll be good to go. But knowing where those tiers are, knowing how much difference there is between those players in the tier is important. To me, I picture it almost like a graph, like plotting it out in Excel and just seeing how big of a drop you have from each player to each player. Just seeing QB 13 versus QB 15 doesn't really do that. It doesn't tell you the value separation. And so for me, if I'm picking a quarterback kind of in the top 14, those are the guys I want to have really elite upside, guys that could finish in the top five, guys that are going to have great weeks. And then after that, kind of after QB 14, I want more reliability. I want guys that I trust. And that's a deep tier of players that aren't incredible, but I think I can trust them every single week. And so once I get outside the top 14, roughly, that's not a specific number, but kind of outside that top 12 to 14, then I'm really waiting a long time, because I feel like there are so many reliable options and I'm not convinced that I can pick out the ones with the really high upside in them. So I'll just take something reliable.
Right. And I think that's important, that if you are going to reach for one of these guys, that you kind of want it to be somebody who has that potential to become a top 10 quarterback. And in the case of a lot of quarterbacks that have been around longer, we have more of a track record. We can tell, like, we know that a guy like Joe Flacco isn't likely to be a top 10 QB at the end of the year. Same with Jay Cutler or Alex Smith. On the flip side, we know that those guys are all relatively consistent in terms of how many points they put up on a weekly basis, where they tend to finish among quarterbacks on a weekly basis. And that has value as well. That consistency, it makes up for the fact that, you know, maybe you didn't reach to draft them, but because you're getting more predictable production, it allows you to rely on those guys being there later in the draft and, you know, producing for your fantasy team. Maybe not in an elite level, but you're not paying an elite level price for them, so it works.
Right, and that tier obviously breaks at some point. I mean, we get down to, in our rankings, just going in order, you get to RG3, who isn't guaranteed a starter spot and hasn't been good the last time he played. Ryan Fitzpatrick, who isn't even on an NFL team. Paxton Lynch also doesn't have a guaranteed starting spot. So it definitely shows that there is a break to that reliable tier, but it is a very deep tier.
Can we talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick for a little while? He's not the spotlight QB, but at what point do we actually need to worry that he may not come back to the Jets, at least?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, could they feasibly wait until like middle of the preseason and then sign him, and would he still be good? I really need to look into, maybe you've seen, what sort of conditioning he's doing, what sort of practicing he's doing. Is he in shape, or is he going to need to come in and get into shape? I mean, obviously his game is not the physical shape. Like, he's not going to be outrunning the linebackers to the edge, but is he in game shape? Is he practicing at all with his team? I know he can't now that they're practicing officially, but did he in the off season? Things like that worry me the longer this goes, just that even if they re-sign him, he may be slow to start.
Well, and the longer it goes on, the more of a chance the Jets have to look at Geno Smith, Bryce Petty, Christian Hackenberg, and figure out if they can get by without him. And while I do still believe that Fitzpatrick will sign with the Jets, I think he's playing a bit of a dangerous game because the Jets are being pretty smart about this. They understand that maybe they don't need him, so why bring him in for, you know, the contract he's demanding when, you know, Geno Smith might be able to do a serviceable job? And that was laid out really well in Joe's QB Camp Battle article that I mentioned earlier, so check that out. But yeah, Fitzpatrick's a tough one to rank because he did perform so well last year, but relative to, you know, where people are drafting him still, I think people are drafting him assuming he's going to start for them. And I just don't know if you can take that gamble now when there's so many other decent options available. I think if you are going to draft Fitzpatrick, it probably makes sense to handcuff him with Geno Smith. What do you think about that?
I definitely see why you would do it. It worries me to... I mean, basically what you're doing is you are getting one usable player out of two roster spots. And so I almost wonder if that's worthwhile or if you would rather grab a Jared Goff or somebody that you think is going to start and not be great. I guess it kind of depends on what you're doing at the quarterback position.
Yeah, it depends a lot on how much you invest in Fitzpatrick in the first place. If you're in a league where he's your QB2, like if you go extremely late round QB and you have Fitzpatrick lined up as one of your starters, then I think it makes sense to do the handcuff. And, you know, as soon as Fitzpatrick signs, you can cut Geno Smith and pick up, you know, best player available from the waiver wire in theory. I think that that's why I would be willing to make the handcuff pick this early in the offseason, because we still have a lot of time to figure stuff out. We know that our rosters are going to change before the season starts.
No, that's a good point. And I think that's true. It very much is different drafting now versus drafting later, because so many things are going to change in the coming 2 months.
Yep. So we talked briefly about, you know, all the different quarterbacks that are in this kind of middle class of QBs. And I want to talk a little bit about our spotlight QB at this point, Jay Cutler. First of all, let's play our game. Let's play the predict the finish of Jay Cutler. In terms of total points for 2016, what QB will he rank as at season's end?
I'm going to go with 22.
22? Now, I like that. I mean, that compares pretty favorably to what we've seen from him the past few years. 2012, he was QB 23. 13, he was also 23. 2014, he was QB 14. And last year, he was QB 20. So we'll get into a little bit more of this later, but he definitely suffers without Mark Trestman. And with that in mind, I don't think he has this quite the same upside that he may have had in 2013 and 2014. I had QB 24 written down. I think that he's a little riskier, if only because he hasn't played a full season in a long time. Now, a couple of those years, he played 15 games, which is probably close enough. But I worry about him from a durability standpoint, and I worry about him from, you know, a John Fox offense standpoint as well.
Right. It's even though he hasn't missed a lot of games most seasons, the fact that he hasn't played 16 in any of the last four seasons says that you can't count on him 100% like you can some of the other quarterbacks in that tier.
That's right. Now, what about points per game? Do you think that he averages points in a way on a per game basis that allow him to, you know, rank higher or lower in terms of weekly production?
I really worry. I mean, this is getting into the bigger topic. I will go ahead and say that points per game, I think he probably is 24, 25. I'll say 24.
Okay, so you're going lower on points per game versus total points, which to me tells me that you like him more as kind of a consistent quarterback filler than anything else. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think that's right, that even though he may miss a game or two, at least you know he's starting. At least he's going to put up some points over the year. But I don't know that he's very exciting on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I have the same feeling as you, and a lot of that has to do with his kind of lack of weapons. Like, there are definitely some weapons there. But he lost a couple guys. Alshon Jeffrey has never been the picture of health either. So I worry about, you know, Cutler having those, you know, big weeks and consistent, you know, high finishes to merit a higher points per game rank. And I have him a few spots lower as well. I have him at QB 26. So we're pretty close. I think our perception of Cutler is the same for the most part.
And I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think we both see him as very near the bottom of that reliable tier, if not the bottom guy.
Yeah, he's right down there with Fitzpatrick, with Joe Flacco for me. And I think, let's see, I'll just look at the rankings here. I have Cutler as my QB24. You have him as your QB23, which is right in line with, you know, the numbers we just threw out in our little guessing game. I have him one spot behind Alex Smith, one spot ahead of Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I would like to rank Fitzpatrick higher. And if he were the Jets quarterback today, he'd be ahead of Jay Cutler. I'll say that.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. The guys that I worry a little bit more about than Cutler are Brock Osweiler, Bridgewater, and then, you know, all the really risky guys who are in potential platoon situations like Gabbert, RG3, and whatnot. But yeah, Cutler to me, I feel like we have a long enough track record of him being mediocre that I'm just willing to, I'm convinced that's what he is.
I think you're right. I mean, we have so many years of data across several teams, across several coaches. We generally know what he's going to do for better and worse.
Yeah, and there are just so many signs to me that point to him being worse now than he has been in his previous good seasons. We mentioned, you know, Mark Trestman is no longer there. Like 2013, 2014 were generally his like best per game seasons over the past 4 years. And I have a couple stats to back that up. If you look at his QB card, you'll see that his 2015 seems like a bit of an outlier. He only had one top 10 finish versus, you know, a few more in previous years. I think that that's a little misleading, but at the same time, I think that's a little indicative of the state of the Chicago Bears in general, not only on the coaching side, but also in terms of the players. Like we mentioned Alshon Jeffrey's health, but, you know, now Matt Forte is gone. Martellus Bennett is gone. They get Kevin White to debut this year, which, you know, should help. But at the same time, this is essentially his rookie year. I don't know if Cutler has the weapons to really perform at a, you know, a high-end QB2 level relative to some of the other guys he's competing with for that, you know, distinction.
Right. No, I think those are valid concerns. It's a lot of good weapons gone. Brandon Marshall's not there anymore. And it does worry you that, sure, it could work out, but are we basically hoping that if it all works out and his weapons around him are fine, that he turns into QB18? Like, it really isn't that exciting.
No, it's really kind of sad, to be honest. It's like when you are drafting these late round QBs, you kind of want to hit on the Tyrod Taylors, on the Blake Bortles, the guys who you don't have that track record for, the ones who could surprise you. I don't see a scenario where Jay Cutler surprises me this year.
Right. And just going over all of this, I mean, he had a really bad year last year where he only finished in the top 10 once out of his 15 games. But just even looking at his top 20 finishes, so making him a QB2, he hasn't been that impressive over any of the last 4 years. And I mean, 46%, 80%, 78%, 60%. I mean, he's missing the top 20 in a significant portion of his games, which hurts my earlier statements that he's reliable. He's reliable in the sense that he's not losing his starting job unless he's injured, but he's not even that reliable that he'll be in the top 20 every week.
Yeah, I mean, he was reliable when Mark Trestman was calling the plays. I think that's the difference. And now that Trestman is gone, and, you know, the year prior, 2012, when Trestman wasn't there, he wasn't great that year either. I mean, 12.3 points per game, you know, and then last year only 15.1 points per game. Both of those ranked outside of the top 25 quarterbacks in points per game. And that stat can be a little misleading in terms of how he ranked, because, you know, you'll get quarterbacks who only played like 1 to 3 games and had a couple good ones, you know. Like last year, Geno Smith had, I think he played one game and it was awesome.
Right. He had a great game.
So he definitely finished higher than Cutler in terms of points per game. But just in general, like, you can look at that PPG rank and you can look at the, you know, QB20 total points rank he put together, and you can see that the upside just isn't there. And for my money, this is the type of thing where I don't want the last guy in this tier. I don't want Jay Cutler. I want to reach a little bit for somebody I believe more in before it's time to draft Jay Cutler. Are you on board with that idea?
I think so. And just talking about it makes me want to go back and relook at things. So right now I have Alex Smith one spot lower, and I think that's probably wrong. You have him flipped, and I think I probably should look at that. And, you know, this is going to sound terrible, but I may have to look at Teddy Bridgewater as well. At least there, we don't have enough data to say he is who he is. Cutler, we kind of do.
Yeah, Teddy has that profile of like the next Alex Smith, some guy who's just kind of boring, is going to put up, you know, QB2 numbers for the rest of his NFL career, at least under that system that he's in now. But because he's still relatively young, there is that unknown. There is that element of, you know, he could blow us all away and have a, you know, a Derek Carr season like last year. I'm not comparing them as you know, talents necessarily, but I think the upside is higher with Bridgewater than it is with Cutler. Now, I mean, we've seen Cutler have good years too, but again, the landscape in his personal scenario has changed, and that's why I'm not a believer.
Right, and just looking at supporting cast, like you said, Cutler has lost a lot of weapons. Bridgewater gained a first round wide receiver and potentially is going to have an Adrian Peterson declining, and so just perhaps going a little heavier reliance on the pass. So you can share narratives that would say maybe Teddy's on the upswing and Cutler is on the downswing. That may be wrong, but it's something I think I will have to go kind of reevaluate this portion of my rankings. But circling back to your point, yes, ideally I would like to have someone higher than this, but I will say these are still consistent starters. So at least we have the benefit of here with any of these names we're talking about, we know they are starting for their team barring injury. And so I can see team compositions where I'm fine waiting to this point, assuming I'm getting really good values everywhere else.
Well, yeah, and to that point, there are going to be some drafts where you say, okay, I'm going to wait one more round on QB, and then out of nowhere, half the guys or maybe like 90% of the guys you thought were going to make it back don't. And you're stuck looking at, okay, I can either take Jay Cutler at the bottom of this tier, or I can really dive into the dregs and consider, you know, RG3, Jared Goff, Sam Bradford in the next round. And if you're caught in that sort of situation, I couldn't fault you for taking Cutler and kind of guaranteeing yourself that locked-in starter. I think that's an important point to make. I'm glad you made it. Do you got anything else on Jay Cutler? I feel like we've bashed him enough. I it's probably not fair to him, to be honest. And again, like, if you are going to wait at QB, you kind of don't care who you get. But I am worried about him relative to the other QBs we have kind of in the same consideration.
Right, and I think it's worth bashing on him in some sense, just because I don't know that the perception is quite caught up to where he is realistically.
Yep. So with that said, let's move into our Twitter questions. We have a few here. The first one is from Ben Gretsch. He says, what's your advice for how to handle the QB flex in the Scott Fish Bowl? What type of premium should be put on the position? Ben, I'm going to tease you. We're going to talk about that in the next episode, okay? So everybody who's listening, tune into that one. We'll go in deep on the Scott Fish Bowl and, you know, our personal outlooks on how we should draft on that. The next question comes from Ben Howell. He says, how have your teams with two elite quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, or similar, how have they fared? Josh, what do your early round quarterback teams look like in the past couple seasons?
I will say this is the first year where I think it is realistically possible that you could have two elite quarterbacks because they've gone so early historically. So I haven't had elite on the level of this is talking about, where you have QB1 and QB3 most years, Rodgers and Brees. So I haven't had many of those teams, and when I do, it seems to have negative repercussions because I've had to trade for them. I didn't draft that way. I had to pay a high price to get an elite quarterback, and I just don't think that's a wise move. So I haven't had it often, but when I have, I don't feel like it puts me in a great position to win. What about you?
I'm kind of a bad person to ask this because I generally don't draft that way in the first place. So I don't have many teams that end up with two elite guys. Now, what you've said is correct, though. They tend to be sliding more and more, and that matches up with that article that Sal wrote that we mentioned earlier about 2QB ADP. These elite guys are sliding down a little further into the second round, the third round, even the fourth round in some cases. And when that's happening, I can get behind it. Like, if you want to take Cam Newton in the first, and then in the fourth round, like beginning of the fourth round, maybe say Drew Brees has fallen that far, or maybe even Russell Wilson. I saw that happen in a recent one of our mocks for 2QB ADP. I can't fault you for going that way, especially if you're talking about a 10-team league where the depth at wide receiver and running back is a little easier to make up for, you know, that opportunity cost of taking elite QBs. The larger your league, though, the more I would worry about trying to get two elite guys. I think it's fine to go after one in a big league, like a 12-teamer or 14-teamer. But the bigger your league gets, the more I think you kind of need to embrace the replaceability of, you know, that mid-level quarterback that we talked about and focus on wide receiver and running back in the early rounds. That's my general opinion.
Yeah, this is one of the first years where elite QBs become a little more appealing for me. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and where that ADP moves over the next 2 months.
Right. It has everything to do with price, right?
For sure.
And speaking about price, Brian Malone asks, why are you all too low on Blake Bortles and what do you plan to do about it?
I love this question.
And so do I. Brian, I might just rank him lower because he is not too low. Blake Bortles is terrible. I won't draft him this year because he's going too high. Speaking of price that's out of whack, no thanks on Blake Bortles. That's my answer.
Nice. Yeah, it's Blake Bortles is one we mentioned earlier with those QB polls that he crushed them, just saying that, which suggests that the community is much higher on him than we are, and ADP backs that up too.
It just feels like so much of a reaction to 1 year and the most recent year. Like, we know that recency bias exists. We know that he tended to overperform in terms of red zone opportunities. Why hasn't that regression been priced into his, you know, status for 2016 when we see that happen to other players more? You know, I don't get it. It's so reactionary to just say, oh, Blake Bortles had one good year. Now he's going to be good for the rest of his life. Like, that's not how fantasy works.
Right. And I think the regression is a huge point because Bortles did not improve his efficiency. So his completion percentage was substantially the same. His interception percentage was close to the same. And his touchdown percentage is what massively spiked. So what that means is that he just got a lot more passing touchdowns per attempt than he did before. And he also threw a lot more last year than he did in 2014. And so those to me aren't saying that he, just on a numerical basis, they aren't saying that he got better as much as he got a better situation. And that situation was that they had a terrible running game. They couldn't do short yardage running, and they were always behind. It's kind of this perfect storm for let's throw all the time and get some touchdowns. And you have to think that regression, just the way that averages work out, even apart from the fact that their defense should be better, suggests that he may not match last year's totals, and people are seeming to value him as if he's a lock to be right there near his last year's totals.
Yeah. And Brian, I'm not sure if this was a tongue-in-cheek question, but if you are really that much higher on Blake Bortles, I would love to hear why, either on Twitter or you can come back on the podcast. Open invite. I just don't get it. I'm out on Bortles. That's it. Our next question and our last question comes from Daniel Lindsay. He says, what's the best way to move a 12-team one quarterback league to a super flex league? This is a tough question to answer, but because I'm not sure exactly what sort of advice you're looking for, it's an easy question to answer in the sense that here's what I'll say. Just do it. Just, you know, add it, see how it goes. If, you know, your league mates don't like it, you can always change back. And I don't anticipate that happening very much. I think that most people who try 2QB tend to like it. If you need anybody to speak on behalf of the format, send me a tweet, shoot us an email, and we'll go to bat for it. I mean, we love this stuff. And we think, I mean, I personally think that most people would enjoy a two quarterback league more than a one quarterback league, considering the way the NFL is these days. What do you think, Josh?
I think that's true, that once people give it a realistic shot, they tend to enjoy it and rarely go back. One thing I'll do is I'll pitch the article by Sal from April. So you'll have to go back a little ways on the site, but his article was about transitioning to 2QB leagues, and he basically is a mailbag from a whole lot of different writers and analysts, some from our site, but several from other sites, saying, here is how I would make that switch. And so particularly for our newer listeners, that is a great article to go back and see if you hadn't seen it before, because there's a lot of really interesting ideas, both for as an owner, how you make the switch, and then as a commissioner, how you make the switch.
Yep. Totally a good read there. You should check that out. Josh, that brings us to the end here. Any parting shots before we wrap it up? We kept things concise for once in our podcasting careers.
Hey, we're doing it. We've got the 4th of July coming up, so our schedule will be off next week. But other than the 4th of July, I'm looking forward to being on a regular schedule, and listeners should be expecting the podcast about the same time every week.
Yep, you and me both. Very excited about this. If you want to help out the pod, support the pod, we encourage you to continue to leave ratings and reviews on iTunes or Stitcher or however else you can rate and review it. These Twitter polls are going to keep going for the Your QB rankings. Check out, I think, Josh, you have a piece coming out on that pretty soon.
Yes, this week, depending on when this goes live, you may already see it or it may be about to come out, but kind of sharing those results.
So you're going to see the results, but please follow us on Twitter. Make sure that you're voting in the polls themselves for the rest of the QBs we still need to go through for the month. We're getting into the top guys, so it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. Make your voice heard. Josh is also still running mock drafts every 2 weeks, I believe, for two QB leagues, correct?
Exactly. We're every 2 weeks right now. As we get into kind of the middle of July, we'll probably switch to weekly, but there has been a huge interest. We just started 7 new mock drafts this week and really having a lot of fun. People kind of trying out strategies, people getting some practice for their leagues. And it's a great way to really kind of get your feet wet and see how this late round quarterback year plays out.
It's also a great way to see how the perception of these players changed just over time. I know that since we started doing the mocks in May, the ADP and where these guys are going is already starting to shift in pretty significant ways. Like, there are guys that used to be able to get in the, you know, fourth or fifth round that are now going in the second and third round, things like that. It's fun to watch, and it's fun to be a part of it, to be honest, because it keeps you thinking about this stuff, and it helps you kind of develop those mental shortcuts to help you understand, like, what a player's value is when it's your turn to pick. And that stuff is invaluable once your real drafts start to roll around. You can also support us by following us on Twitter at 2QBs. That's TWOQBS. We're on Instagram as well. We'd appreciate it if you gave us a like on Facebook. You have to search us up there or go to facebook.com/2QBs.com. You have to spell it all out, like TWOQBSDOTCOM. And I'm a fast talker, so I hope you got all that. Last up for, you know, longer form questions, any other stuff you want to discuss with us, maybe off Twitter, in a more private setting, you can always send us an email, 2QBs@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening very much. Josh, thank you, as always, for co-hosting this crazy podcast. And we'll catch you next time, next week, every week on the 2QB Experience. We're out of here. Thanks.